I'm not going to talk about those. What I'm just going to talk about is the form of motions, how the paperwork should be assembled, what it should look like, and so forth. But once you understand motions, you can do just about anything with a motion. Yes?
Is this on the website? No.
It will be. Right now it's not. It's on the CD. But I will be putting this up because now I've modified it. The CD pretty much parallels the website. Some things I don't have on the website, like for instance Title 26, Title 28, Title 18, you know, those things. I don't have those on there because you get them on the internet anyway. You know, those are publicly available. But, yes?
Well, the problem with that is they don't publish the headnotes and
footnotes. Neither do I. I don't publish the headnotes and footnotes either. I got these things off the internet. That's where they came from. So, I know it's available. Well, I'm gonna start working on that right away. I suppose I'll have them mailed out by Friday, I'm sure.
If you want to wait tonight, I'll get you the DVDs.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyhow, we have the we're going to talk about the form of motions. Here's the thing: here I am. If I want something from you, I ask, right? I can ask any question. Whether I get the answer I like is a whole another possibility. But the fact is that if I want something from you, I ask you.
We need something
from you. I don't have it.
For you to turn your mic up, please, or have it.
Okay, yeah.
Your mic is not working at this time.
Oh. And part of it is the air conditioning. The fans are there. Okay, but is that a little better? Is that a little better now? Okay, a little bit of a ring there, but I guess a little feedback, but we're okay. All right, so with motions, basically all a motion is it's a letter you write to the court asking the court for a decision. The first motion that you write is not called a motion at all. It's called a complaint. But the idea is basically the same. You write a letter to the court, and you ask the court for whatever you want, and then the court responds. And then, of course, in fairness, the other person gets a chance to respond to whatever your motion is. So there's a procedure to follow. But every motion has five basic points, or five basic papers that are required. So the first one is a notice of motion. It's a little unfair for me to make a motion to the court and not tell you about it if you have an interest in it. Yes, sir?
What's the difference between a motion and a petition?
Nothing. See, there's only two kinds of paper. There's only one kind of paper when you get right down to it. It's called, you know, in substance, it's a motion. You're asking the court for something, and the court's going to respond with a yay or nay. But the first paper that you file in, the first motion you put in, is called a complaint or an action in law. After that, you make motions, and some motions are very specialized. Like you have a motion to quash, you have a motion for reconsideration, you have a motion to vacate judgment, you know. But it all boils down to the very same thing, and that is that you're presenting a question to the court, and you want an answer from the court, yay or nay. And of course, as I discussed earlier today, you'd like to have the right decision come back, and so it's good for you to be in charge. You know, make it your court when you make that motion. But the idea is that you're writing a letter to the judge, or not the judge, I mean to the court, and you want that court to come back with an answer. And of course, you're fighting for your side. So you have to, you need to format these things correctly. And there's a standard way to format it. And if you do this, it makes it a lot easier for everyone else, because everyone else is looking for you to format it that way. And if you do it that way, then it's easier for them to absorb what you're getting at when you're getting at it. So, but the first thing is you got to put in a notice of a motion. Hey, everybody, I'm going to ask the court this question. Be there or be square. So that's what the notice is for. Exactly that, giving notice to everybody. Then you make the actual motion. You go to the court and you say, well, this is what I want. Well, of course, if that's all you do, the logical thing the court's going to do is say, well, okay, you want it, but why should we give it to you? So then you bring in two other items. One item you bring in is called facts. Okay, what are the facts in this that surround this problem? And then the other thing you bring in is, well, what are the rules of the game? What laws are there? Or if you don't have any laws, what philosophies you have? Or something, you know, some authority that the court can look at and say, oh, okay, that makes sense. All right, so you put the two together, but if you just present the facts in the form of an affidavit, and you just present the law in the form of authorities, that's not enough. Basically, if that's all you do, you're asking the person, court or anybody else that you present it to, if that's all you do, you're asking them to do your thinking for you. And you want to do their thinking for them. It's much better that way. So, in your paper, you include also your arguments. Why is it? How do the rules of the game combined with the facts of the matter come together in order to deliver to you the very thing you want out of the court? That's called argument. Okay, so we have argument. That's the C there. Now, it's true that you put together a notice, you put together a motion, you put together your points and authorities, and you file it with the court, but how does the court know that, although you have the notice, motion, and affidavit and points and authorities, how does the court know that the other side got proper notice? So you've got to put in a paper with the court telling the court that yes, indeed, everybody got a copy, and that's called a proof of service. So now the court knows that, well, you were polite, you were fair, you gave them their notice. Now the court doesn't care if they don't respond. But if you put in a motion without a proof of service, the court is very much concerned that this is a one-sided deal. Okay? So they want you to notify other people. All right, and then you have a proposed order. Now, the rules of court, if you look at the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, and I believe it's also in the state rules, but I'm not sure, attorneys are prohibited from submitting proposed orders. Okay? They may not do this unless they get the court's permission. Okay? There's a very good reason for that. Attorneys are not sovereigns. They are officers of the court. Their job, in fact, their primary job, their primary duty is to the court. Their secondary duty is to their clients. And by the way, you'll find that in American jurisprudence, AmJur. I don't know, it's first, second, or maybe all three of them. But you look up an attorney, you'll find out that an attorney's first duty is to the court, second duty is to the client. Okay? So that he's an officer of the court. The theory is, and it of course doesn't work, but the theory is that all of these attorneys are actually counselors, and they all have a common interest, that is to seek the truth. Right, right. Well, I tried to warn you. But that's the theory, okay? So, but you see, attorneys are not the interested parties. They are merely representatives, or they are court officers, but they're not the interested parties. And because they're not the interested parties, they really don't qualify to decide what order should be or not be. Now, if you're not an attorney, you definitely can put in a proposed order. But if you're an attorney, you're prohibited from it. Usually what happens is when the court renders a decision, they also instruct one of the attorneys to write it up. Usually the winning side writes it up. And, well, that's fine. They can do it if the court instructs them to do it. But other than that, they cannot. Anybody here know what the word render means? I used it just now. What does render mean? You say the court renders a decision. It's not a decision at all. It's a proposed decision. There are cases where that got appealed, where the judge issued a decision, but when the decision actually got on paper, it went the other way. and it got appealed, and the Supreme Courts have said a decision's not a decision until it's on paper and signed. And as long as we're on the subject of decisions, anybody know what a minute order is? Why do we have minute orders? Anybody know why we have minute orders, what they are? You see them all the time. No, it's not a conclusion of law from the judge. It's not a decision. It's not an order. It's not a ruling even.
It's an accounting of the day's decision.
Not even that. A minute order is not part of the record. And what it is that you have to look back in your court history to understand this. Back in the good old days, several hundred years ago, all opinions or decisions of the court were written in a large hand, great big letters on the paper, and delivered to the parties. It was written in large hand. The clerk kept notes of the court procedure. Those notes were written in a small hand, minute hand. Okay? So, minutes of the clerk, or minute handwriting, is merely notes of the clerk and have no legal standing. Okay? No legal standing. Now, all these courts are issuing minute orders when they issue it. Can you have a clue why they issue minute orders instead of an actual order? Well, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. The California Constitution requires that all courts in California be courts of record. Now, you know what a court of record is, right? We went through the five requirements. Now, but they're conducting courts not of record. True, they're keeping a record, but they don't meet the qualification for that term of art, court of record. So how can they have a court not of record without violating a court of record? Okay? Well, what they do is they issue minute orders. And since nobody understands what a minute order is, that it's merely the clerk's minutes, because, see, a judge can act as a clerk if he chooses. All right? Since nobody understands that minute orders, what they are, all they know is they're in court, the judge said, do this, he issues a minute order, and they all accept it, not knowing that it's not the real thing. Okay? And, of course, if somebody violates the minute order, they can be persecuted as well as prosecuted for contempt of court, but it's only because nobody understands that minute order is not a real order. And this is some of you have heard of that case the other day where we put in a notice to the sheriff and some other people that the minute order issued by an order was an order without jurisdiction. And that was the reason why, because it was not a court of record. It could not have been issued by a court of record. It was a decision purely out of a nisi prius court, accepting that it wasn't even a nisi prius court because, after all, the person did object. So, there you are. So, anyway, that enough of that. So let's go back here. So that's the overview of a motion. And there's a seventh item here, which is after the order is produced by the court, then the winning party typically sends out a notice, or the clerk can send out a notice to all the parties saying what that decision was. So it's called a notice. And of course, a notice of ruling is exactly the same format as a notice of motion. It's just that we're saying what the decision was. So let's take them one by one. Let's talk about first what the notice looks like. Here is a notice. Okay, it has a format that you're all familiar with. All right, what's going on here? Sorry, didn't mean to advertise Microsoft. Okay, now this is a notice of motion that actually came out of a case. I had a case here. Now here was my problem. some people were taking care of my dad, and when his mind was failing him, they got him to sign away the title to his home. There's a name for that. It's called undue influence. Okay, and normally undue influence is an equity issue, but nevertheless, this happened. So I decided to sue some people, and we had some complications along the way. Well, we arrived at a point where he passed away. So when that happened, since he was the plaintiff in the case, normally a case dies. Okay? That's it. Unless it involves property. If it involves property, then the case can continue, but you have to find a substitute plaintiff. Who's going to step in for the old plaintiff? Well, since I was the logical heir to the property, and I was also present at all times when the offenses occurred against my dad, like for instance, when the nurse came to take care of him, the property manager of the mobile home park came out screaming at the nurse, telling her she shouldn't be here, stuff like that. Really unreasonable people, I think. So, anyhow, we had this lawsuit going. And now, what I wanted to do is I wanted to become the new plaintiff. So, there was no plaintiff. So, they had issued a court order of some kind dismissing the case. But you see, you can't dismiss a case if there's no sovereign of the court. Right? What's the definition of court? Person in suit of the sovereign. Well, if the sovereign dies, you're left only with the suit. You can't do anything. No orders can logically or legally or lawfully be issued by the judges. But they did it anyway. So we had an attorney representing us. I did all the work, and the attorney just signed the papers. But he was very helpful and very reasonable with his fees because of that. Really good guy, as a matter of fact. And one of the few good attorneys I've ever met, actually. But he, when the case was basically done from his point of view, and our cause basically was gone, but I had decided, well, heck, I think I'll just kind of continue on with it because I'm getting a legal education out of it. See, so the first thing I did is I had the attorney sign off of the case, and I sign on. That's the substitution of attorney. So I was actually the new attorney for the case, which is okay because I'm not representing anybody. You know, the plaintiff is deceased, so it just has an attorney. But get this, I'm the only legitimate officer on the plaintiff's side of the case, on the king's side. So this motion here is a motion to add me on as a plaintiff. Okay, but I think it really illustrates the principles involved here, because this was done exactly according to book. So here we have the first thing is a notice of motion. So that's my name in the upper left hand corner. That's my old phone number. Don't call it. That person no longer is. I don't know who has a number now, but that's my old address. But anyhow, so William C. Thornton was the prior plaintiff. And this is a notice of motion for substitution of plaintiff ex parte. Now, ex parte means without the other party present. Now, I was making this motion essentially ex parte, but as a courtesy, I was letting other people know. See, when you're ex parte, you don't have to let them know. Not necessarily. But if you let them know, it's kind of nice. And this was, you see, these were issues that weren't really key to them. But I still let them know. Anyway, it was ex parte, but there's really no difference between ex parte and a regular, because the idea is you're giving notice to people. Okay? And so we have these defendants. Now, I also want to tell you that when we sued, we had all these defendants. They did a countersuit. Okay? And this heading that you see here shows the proper format for a counter suit or a counterclaim or a countercomplaint. Any of those terms, this is the proper format. You'll notice that on lines 10 through 15, it has the plaintiff and it has the defendants. Okay, that's your normal form. You've all seen that. And of course, always on line number 8, never any other line, you have the name of the court, Superior Court, right? Alright, but in the counterclaim, this is a suit going the opposite direction. Same case number, but the opposite direction. And so, right below the original caption, you have the other way caption. So this was Burl Gregory Enterprises cross-complaining against us and also cross-complaining against some of the other defendants. Basically, I think his original cross-complaint was that he didn't want to be held liable. He was trying to pass, if he did lose, he wanted to pass it through to the other defendants. That's what it amounted to. But anyway, that's the layout. In this case, he said cross-complainant. If you do a counterclaim, when you're at law, if you do a counterclaim, then where it says cross-complainant, you would put counter-plaintiff. Okay? And down below, they would be counter-defendants. And now is another little side note, because I like to throw these things in. Let's say that somebody throws a rock at you while you're driving your friend's car, okay? And you get injured. Okay, so you're going to sue the rock thrower, all right? Now, the owner of the car that you had borrowed says, I don't want to mess with it. And you're saying, well, come on, you should sue him because, you know, you're in it with me. I mean, it was your car, and if you sue too, your testimony and all that adds to my case, you know? So you should be there. And he says, I don't want to bother with it. But what do you do when you have a reluctant co-plaintiff? Well, what you do is you add him to the suit. You make him a defendant, and you identify him as an adversarial co-plaintiff or something like that. What is it? Hostile co-plaintiff. That would be it. See, so you're naming as a defendant, but you're saying, hey, you're coming into this suit whether you like it or not. Okay? So that's how you can do that sometimes. And you can have fun with that. So I know that can be a problem sometimes, that people won't cooperate when they really should. So just as you can subpoena witnesses in that don't want to testify and don't want to get involved, you can bring in co-plaintiffs whether they like it or not. Okay, but anyway, that's the format for it. Now, typically, you have your case number, okay, and you have a notice of motion for substitution of plaintiff. Now, that little caption up there, sometimes clerks are very sensitive. If you call something by a notice or a motion or whatever it is, you get these terms down right, they accept it. If you get the terms down wrong, they don't accept it. But here's a little hint. You can call it anything you want because the general rule of thumb is that titles don't count. Okay? What does count is what's in the body of the motion, the actual substance, the writings that you put in it. That's what counts. You could call it a motion to dismiss when it's actually a habeas corpus. Okay? So substance counts, but sometimes to get around clerks, you have to fiddle with the title. So that's what you do. Okay? Because when you get right down to it, they're all motions. You're writing a letter to the court. Okay, so, and then typically where you see it says ex parte, a lot of times what that means is, not the ex parte, but that little spot, what you put in there is maybe you're doing something unusual that people might not recognize. So right there you put the code section that authorizes it. You'll see CCP something or other, or CC something, code of civil procedure or the civil code, or penal code such and such. Penal code authorizes it. So if you are using the statutes or you are using the codes, if you put the specific code right in that little space where it says ex parte, that within the parenthesis, then people know that you've got some legitimacy there, even though it's unusual, okay? And then they can look it up themselves. So just the whole concept, the whole idea of that top part of the paper is just to make things easier for people to get focused on what you're doing. That's the idea. Now, none of it affects you. What only affects you is the body, what you put in the body. But this helps the reader. You're trying to communicate, and this helps to clarify things for people. Okay. Then typically, when you go up to the window, and you say, I want to make a motion. You get a date from the clerk. Now, different courts have different policies. Some courts say, come on in, file all your paperwork, come back later with the proof of service when you serve them, but we'll give you a date when you do that. Others say, call us first on the phone, we'll assign you a date, and then show up with the paperwork. Others say, we don't want to hear from you. Just show up on a certain date. We have a standard date. Every Thursday at 1 p.m., we hear motions. Just walk in. So what the court does depends on which court you're in. So you've got to find the clerk, find out what's the procedure for getting a date. Okay? Also, another thing is that how many of you have been told, I'm sorry, sir, or I'm sorry, ma'am, but we cannot give you legal advice? You ever heard that?
All the time.
The reason they're giving that to you is because you're asking the wrong, asking the right questions, but in the wrong way. What you should say whenever you go to a clerk or anybody of that kind, you say to them, not what should I do? You say to them, what do you require? As soon as you say, what do you require, you've eliminated their responsibility. Now they can speak freely. You will hear that reject notice less often if you say, what is it that you require? They'll say, oh, I can't take this. I don't say, why won't you take it? What I say is, well, what are your requirements? And then they feel free to speak. Because if you look at the rules of court, now I can't speak for every court, but I do know that in the Orange County Superior Court, the clerks are specifically instructed to be helpful. Okay, it is their job, and it's in the rules. It is their job to help you, not to advise you. Okay, so what's the difference between being helpful and advising? Well, it's the difference between what should I do and what are your requirements. Okay? So make sure you ask the question. It's not what you ask, it's how you ask it. Okay? All right, so anyway, typically you get the date, you get the department it's going to be heard in, and you get the name of the judge. That's typically, and you put just right there those three little lines, and that you put that on all your paperwork for that specific motion. That helps to orient people. Now this here, of course, is just a notice of motion. Okay? So that's what it says. And here's the notice of the motion. To all interested parties, please take notice in the above entitled court that on January 15th, 1987 at 1 p.m. or as soon thereafter as the matter may be heard in Department 430 of this court located at 125 77 Drive, Santa Ana, California, William R. Thornton will and hereby does move for an order substituting the plaintiff in this action. And then sign it as the petitioner. It's just a notice. Just saying, here's just a brief statement. This does not have to be legally correct. Okay? Because you're not asking anything. You're just pay attention. Now, as a matter of writing technique, I want you to notice that to all interested parties, please take notice. It's all capital letters. The rest is in upper and lower case. Why is that? Well, I cannot give you any good reason that you can check, okay? So all I'm going to give you is hearsay as to why that's done. But I've seen it on a lot of papers that they open up with capital letters. But I was talking with a person one time who said that he had been in Washington, D.C., and he went to some court in Washington, D.C., and he filed a paper up there, and the clerk told him that they couldn't accept it. And then the clerk paused and looked at it and said, oh, it's in all capitals. Now we have to listen. That's all I can tell you about what the story I heard, okay? But you think about it. It's true. All caps is yelling on paper, okay? And what did the town crier go do back in the old days? Because a lot of this stuff is based on ancient custom. The town crier went down through the town ringing his bell, 12 o'clock and all's well. Or else he had some news notice that the neighborhood should know about. They had town criers back in olden days. Okay? So you yell at the person. You say, hey, wake up. I got to say this to you. Listen. That's all caps. And then you speak in ordinary tones, because now you should have their attention. And they can't say they didn't know because you yelled at them.